give that shit up, you can concentrate on golf.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
You play ball like a girl!
Hi everybody, and welcome to a Roy Orbison Tattoo Podcast with me, Cullum, and my co-hosts, Mossy and Paul. This is episode 7 of season 3. If it is your first time listening, I would advise to go back to the start and listen from episode 1, as we will refer to previous shows from time to time. This show does contain film spoilers, so if you've not yet seen the film, I would advise watching it first. It might help you understand a little bit better. Now for today's show, I hope you enjoy. Okay, so this week we are joined by Mossy and Paul, as always. Welcome,
how
lads.
Doing, boys?
How are things?
Good. And this week we are joined by Shane O'Hanlon. I suppose, Shane, you're a GDA in Wexford. Do you want to give a small background on yourself, I suppose, and what got you into the role of full-time GA employee?
Yeah. Thanks, Colin. So I suppose I've been with Wexford now for the last 6 years. And before that, I was with the EDB in Wicklow as a sports promotion officer, but I was actually with the GA before that over in England as well for a couple of years. And I was in college over there and stuff. So kind of fell into a role in the GAA of college because I did PE teaching in college and started the GAA is like the mafia. I haven't been able to get out since, you know. So that's kind of me coaching background or where I am, you know.
Very good. And the film you have chosen for us to discuss is Kicking and Screaming with Will Ferrell. And what pulled you towards this film to discuss?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because it's probably one of Will Ferrell's lesser known films, but I suppose it's along the lines of coaching. There's a load of that in it, and it's obviously a sports film about soccer. But I actually probably 4 or 5 years ago, I remember doing, I think it was either a workshop, it could have been a foundation course that was delivered, and I used some of the clips off YouTube and some of the pictures from this film, and that's probably where I discovered it. And then the more, I hadn't actually watched it in a while, but when I watch back over, sure, there's loads that you can learn about coaching from the film, and it gives you a bit of a laugh too, which is a good way of doing it, you know.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, I was watching it and I was thinking, if we asked, if we made it a bit of a rite of passage that every coach, once they get to under 8, they have to watch this film and, I suppose, reflect on it themselves, there'd be a huge amount of learning out of it from themselves, because they can get completely wrapped up in the winning and pass the ball to Johnny and leave him do the damage. And I suppose it just gives a completely different perspective on what they should be looking at.
Totally. And I remember at the foundation course, I actually suggested that to a couple of people on it after one of the clips. It was one of the clips where he was dealing with the parents for the first time and not picking favourites. Was a pretty funny clip. But saying some of the things, the point I was trying to make in the course, was some of the things you don't realise that you're getting into when you take over a team, and that you have to play politics with parents and stuff. And then I remember suggesting, look, there's loads in, go away and have a look at it, and you'll see a lot of what I mean, like, you know.
Jeez, it sounds like you probably have the patent idea of using films to help coaching, Shane. We're after stealing your idea that you were using a few years ago.
Yeah, maybe, but I'd forgot about it. I'd forgot I used to do it. So I might, the next course I'm doing, I might just take that on and sit back and let that do the talking.
Give him the link for all our episodes there, Shane.
Yeah. Like a good secondary school teacher.
Yeah,
very good. Mossy and Paul, what do you think of the film?
I think I text you on whenever I was watching. I was watching a Friday night and it was a long week, and I was saying, oh, this is torture. But I actually watched it again with the kids on Saturday, and I looked at a different perspective, and I took a lot more out of it while watching it with the kids and looking at it from their angle, if you get me. And really enjoyed it the second time around, actually, to be honest.
Yeah, look, I'd be a massive Will Ferrell fan. This wouldn't be up there in the top 5 or even 10 films possibly with him, but look, I did enjoy it. And look, there's a huge amount of stuff there for juvenile coaching in it, you know. So and even we'd probably only glance on a lot of the things that happened in the film tonight. I would really recommend people to go and watch it, and they'll take different people take different things from it from their perspective, you know.
Yeah, and I think one of the first things in it, and I suppose we can all probably attest with a small bit from our roles, our former roles, but the whole, there's no coach here, who's going to look after the team, and you've got excuse and excuse and excuse coming in And eventually someone gets burdened with a task.
Yeah, there was a great line in that, actually. The pressure of coaching got to Benson. Like, coaching, we'll say, under 11, I think it was, soccer, and like the pressure of it got to Coach Benson. But you can see that happening from time to time. Some people are very successful in their different walks of life. Then they're just not able to deal with that coaching environment. It's a very unique skill set to be dealing with, particularly a ragtag bunch of kids like the Tigers, you know?
Yeah, and I suppose one of the first things he did was he actually had the wherewithal to go and try to get an experienced coach to give him a hand. And I suppose that can be beneficial in some ways. It can also probably have negative connotations in other ways. But what do you think of that?
That would have been one of the things I put down as one of his positives. You know, going, he kind of, after the first training session, he was started crying to life that he was out in his depth and stuff. And who could he turn to? That was going to be able to rival his father. So he thought of Mike Ditka. That's another thing I liked about the film. I'd be a bit of an American football fan too. You love seeing the likes of him coming in. I think it'd be a good thing for a coach to do if they're out. If they're roped into or looked and coached, and they knew they're out of their depths, go get some expertise. Now, Grandy was a coach from a different sport, so I don't know how well it would work, but it was definitely a help to him, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think not even just say it under 8s, 10s, or 12s, any level of coaching, there's no harm asking for help or advice or more or less a mentorship role of somebody who has maybe more experience in that area before. There's always something that you can learn. It's also a good person you can bounce ideas off and get their thoughts and things. So I wouldn't rule it out, even if you're coaching a senior team or whatever it is, just a form of mentorship with somebody who may help you along your journey.
I think one of the great flaws in the GA within clubs is the, I suppose, the misuse of coaching expertise. And what I mean by that is that, let's say, Shane, you're in charge of the under-6 team in the club, and in 12 years' time, you're looking after the under-17 or under-18 team. And if you don't progress onto adult level and you don't have any more kids, you're kind of just falling out of the system. And the club, they don't deem you good enough to be the senior manager. And you're kind of, somebody that's spent so much time into looking after their craft, and then they're gone, And when you see this kind of film, it might just click in your mind. Well, it clicked in my mind. Christ, you know what? That person I know, he'd be an uncle-in-law. He would have went through his whole age groups with his son, all the way up to under 21, from 7 to 21. And he was out of the game for a couple of months. And then he was straight back in with an under 14 team, who just knew that he had learned so much that he was able to give something back. And for clubs, it's really important that they kind of look at those people, because they're, a lot of the time, they're the forgotten kind of experts.
Yeah, those guys that bring an age group right up but don't go on to an adult coach or whatever, coaching an adult team, they would still have a serious amount of knowledge, to help them. And that's why, and every club has them. Every club probably has loads of them, if you go looking for it. And a lot of the time, if they got on well and enjoyed it, they'd be more than happy to get involved, I'd imagine,
And I think one of the other things, as I said, you're speaking about Mike Ditka there a while ago, and obviously he came from a different sport, but I think it does transcend. Coaching is kind of an art that will transcend any sport. It's like a teacher who is a maths teacher. He could probably still go in and teach a different subject to using the same sort of tactic or style, or I suppose skills acquired. And it is something that we start to see an awful lot in the GA now. We see other coaches coming across from other sports.
I was just going to say, you could even see, even though the kids didn't really know who he was, but they perked up when he started talking to him, even though probably not the right way to talk to kids. But, he was some way inspiring and kind of the new immense business, and that's just from knowing how to talk to people now. It was probably kind of the parents seemed to be more involved, because the kids didn't really know who he was. That's, we still do that in Wexford. We bring in guys from 1916 to coach kids, and they don't even know who they are. But but there definitely is. There's a lot of value in transferring skills over from other sports.
You'd have to be fairly selective now, and what fellas you're getting in from that 96 group.
Yeah, be long run ruining themselves off lists all right now to ask in, but
there was a great line from one of the parents, like, and they were giving out about Divkit, like, and they were going, oh, sure, he's only a football coach, like, you know. And you always get that when, it could be a scenario that someone like people are classified as a hurling man or a football man, if they cross over codes, they go, Asher, what does he know? Sure, he's only a hurling man and he never played any football at a serious level, and there'd be kind of stuff leveled at people like this. But like, I suppose that thing of Ditka coming from American football to soccer, like that saying, and I think it's really good, if you want to teach Johnny how to play soccer, you need to know about soccer and you need to know about Johnny, you know. And that, like, you get that connection with the person there first of all, and I'm not saying Dick had got that, but just if you get that connection, it doesn't really matter what domain you're coming from, as long as you understand people and the context and environment you're in.
I think a lot about is enthusiasm, isn't it, really, and getting that respect straight away. But like, I remember speaking to a coach before who was going into schools, and he says, well, I went into schools and started teaching them tiddlywinks. They'd all play tiddlywinks, because he knew how to speak to children. He knew how to get them down to the club because he knew what they liked, and he was able to talk to them. And I think that's the same with any coach going down to under six, under eight, tens. If you're enthusiastic and you get the kids on side by getting them enjoying it, they'll buy into it straight away. And that's when you can start approaching the coaching side of things, really. It's about making a good impression at the start and making sure they want to be there.
The mantra of coach the person, not the sport or whatever, like, you know. Like,
exactly, yeah.
The lead thing, like, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I know, Matthew, you mentioned about schools there, but for a lot of kids, and like, look, it's probably something that's probably more topical to us than others, but for a lot of kids, the first introduction they have to GAA could be in the school setting. And like, I know that where the, like, I know in Wexford, O'Shane, I think you've half your clubs covered with a full-time coach or a GPO. Do you know Dublin?
Near enough, yeah.
Like, and when you've got an expert that, and they are, they're professionals in their craft, like, that if they're going down to a school and a 5 or 6 year old, the first time their interaction is with a GA is with a coach in school, and it's a real fun, enjoyable experience, that's something that'll transfer to them sticking with, or to trying it out, or sticking with the game a little bit longer, like, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And even like when we talk about cool camps, usually like cool camps, your coaches are, you know, kids in college or they're just, you know, just out of school, like, and we say you're not trying to turn them into all-stars in a week, you're trying to make sure they go home with a smile on their face and say, you know, they had the best week of the summer or whatever it was, because it's a promoted, the aim of it is to get them back and keep them interested, like, it's the word isn't about promotion, you know, you're promoting the sport to keep for a lifelong interest in it, like, you know. And that's missed by a lot of coaches, I think.
You want them to go home, like, at any end, like, right up that level, but especially your kids, you want them to go home with a smile on their face, and their last memory of that session has been something fun and positive, because if they get that, they want it to come back again. That's their memory they have in their head. I think that goes with any way in life, really. If you go home with a negative experience of something, you're less likely to do that again, or be enthusiastic to be down the training field again next Saturday morning or whenever it is.
Yeah, and you know what, another thing, like, along them lines that came out in the film, like, after every goal, they had a great celebration.
Brilliant.
Oh, like, I know it isn't a done thing in Gaelic games, but I would say in soccer that there is that with kids, there's way more that bit of crack around, oh, what are we going to do now as a celebration if we score a goal or whatever, and that just gets a little bit of a different social interaction coming in, you know. So maybe a little bit more celebrating for kids when they get a score in the GAA. But it'd be funny to be hearing some of the things from the old timers on the side, and if there was outlandish celebrations going on.
I'd say, yeah, I don't know how long it lasts now, Paula. I know you're saying that though, but wait and see now on a Leinster final or something like that.
And the quick puck out.
Maybe they can do the celebrations at halftime or the water break or something like that. Look, I suppose one of the overarching themes in the whole film was, I suppose, the fun versus competitive side of things. And like, I think that's probably the main thing for us, Shane, that we're looking at this film is, I suppose, the transition where he went from the start being fun and really enthusiastic to getting ultra competitive and losing the fun side and eventually coming full circle back to the start. Like, but like for a coach, it's a small bit of a life cycle for a coach really as well. You can relate with like, can't we?
Yeah, definitely. And even like, it was very interesting, like the first game that I think they played, they got absolutely hammered 13-0, and he was saying, all great job, and everyone tried hard and all this kind of stuff. And the kids were kind of half listening. So the next game, they got hammered again, and he was saying the same things. And the kids, you could see that they knew he was, you know, making it up or whatever. They didn't believe him. Like, and that's something that's very difficult that happens in coaching. Really, like you're trying to find the positives always. You're, you know, especially with younger kids, you're trying to say well done and encourage them. But I think I've often spoken before, like the well done wears off if you don't have something legitimate to go with it. So by just saying well done, great job, well done, it soon wears off unless you can actually say what they've done well. And that's, I think that kind of happened to him before he went the other way, the winning orientated. Thing, like, you know, and the kids see through that as well. So that's a really difficult job for coaches, I think, if they do have, I suppose, a team that's struggling or a relatively poor team that's not getting results or whatever. How do you keep them interested without lying to them, basically? You know,
it's very interesting the way to see that kids actually can pick up on a coach and all their what they're doing, like straight away. Like I said, I watched the film again then on Saturday with my kids, and the five-year-old girl said during the film, she goes, when the two Italians were getting the ball all the time, she goes, they're not passing the ball to anybody else. Nobody else is getting kicking the ball. And like, that's like a five-year-old who could pick that up from a film. Like, so imagine you're coaching your 6 or 7-year-old, whatever it is. Like, they know these things. Like, you can spot straight away, oh, he only lets certain people take the frees or the sidelines or kickouts or whatever it is. Like, children pick up on things very, very quickly. And if you have a bad impression, if you make a bad impression on children, they won't forget it. It's like very hard to get them to change their mind and things like so.
He even, I think it was probably even in the final, the little guy, Bjornsson, who picked their call. he got a ball on his own and he took a shot, and sure, he took him off. What he said to him,
training.
You can never, ever, ever shoot in a game. You can shoot all you want to practice, but never, ever in a game. And what is it? Grab some bench. So that's something that I think if you said that to a chap, he wouldn't be long heading off on you, you know.
Like for coaches, like I think every coach does eventually go full circle. Like, but we'd see coaches that, as you said, did start off real child friendly, you know, let's make it as enjoyable as possible. And as games ramp up, we're under 7, under 8, under 9, there's a real competitive edge comes. And like, I don't know about Gino, but my experience with coaches is that if a coach comes back a second time, so let's say, Massa, you go through with Daniel and you come back 4 years later with Izzy, you're a completely different coach. You're after seeing a huge amount of flaws yourself of the kind of win at all costs attitude. Like, and I think, do coaches actually have to have that experience themselves? Like, as we, and all as coach educators, Shane, we talk about it constantly, you know, it's about everyone being getting game time and being fair and, you know, respectable like that. But do coaches actually have to have the experience of the trying to win at all costs, seeing the failure of that and then coming back? Or is there another way?
Like, I don't know. I'd say you're nearly like, going back to talking about your coaches that come right up along to minor with the team, you nearly have to do that and realize that of the 20 chaps you had at under 8 or 10, you only, why am I struggling to get a team now with minor? And maybe for some people it takes that, you know, hopefully it wouldn't take as long as maybe minor, but you mightn't be able to feel the team to realize it or whatever, like, you know. And the one thing I know, again, from doing course and stuff like that, and generally we'll be talking about if players aren't listening or they're messing in your sessions, I usually 9 times out of 10, it's whose fault is it? And it's the coach's fault, because they're either not doing something to engage them, or they haven't challenged them the right way or whatever. So you kind of, the first place you should look is yourself. But definitely, I know myself when I started out coaching, like I was probably a bit like Phil there when he was starting to win games and stuff at times, like, definitely. And you kind of, I think it gets to a stage where you you start to see the bigger picture, you know, especially with underage kids, you know, but it probably does take making a lot of mistakes to get there, I'd imagine, you know.
Like, I think it's a good idea for a club to have a look at teams up along the way who are losing players compared to maybe a team who might be a couple of years younger, but to get there, who kept their players, and wonder what did they do differently to the team that was losing the players, and ask questions of that team. What did you do? And find out what is the best practice for that team. And it can it be something that we can pass down from age group to age group? Was it the case that your training sessions are all game-based training sessions? Was it the case that you went on trips to other counties every month? Or did you bring them to Croke Park? Or what way did you get all? Did you get more parents involved in the team or whatever way it was? And find out what worked. And that should be shared in the club then as a sort of a best practice model for every team growing up from, say, under eight. So
definitely, like, you'd hear some clubs and they have, like, you know, under 16, maybe there's a link with a club, you know, far away, and they go on an overnight weekend. And, you know, that's something, even at under 14 or under 12, you're looking forward to when you get to under 16, just we're going to go on the trip to down to Cork or wherever it is, you know. Little things like that would be good for keeping lads kind of engaged long term. And it's not about, oh, we have to stay playing now because we're going to an adult or want to win a minor championship or whatever, like, yeah. You know, it's something else to look forward to. Yeah,
it's the little things along the way, isn't it?
If we always remember our first bus trip, we always remember, I'd say, nearly every bus trip. And it's something that I suppose parents take for granted, like the enjoyment of kids going on a bus with a bunch of their teammates and friends and going away. And, like, I know Paul, we've spoken about this in the past, and Paul has shared many stories of Down to Kilkenny and Down to Wexford and places such, but it is crucially important that the kids get an opportunity to bond. Like, even they used the camping trip in the film, but, like, it was just something different that they did outside of going down to the pitch and playing a match or training.
It was like a lot of the things in the film. It was a good idea, but poorly executed, probably, you know, when he started howling and things like that. It was a kind of a team building thing, you know. So it was probably coming from a good place, really. Like, you know.
Do you remember the song Eiffel 65 Blue?
Yeah.
that was out when I was about under 14 or 15. I can remember going on buses and we were singing that, like, obviously massively out of tune now. But I can still remember that bus journey singing that song, you know.
Give us a bar there, Paul.
No.
It's a good old Ranger, Ranger song, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it a Ranger song, yeah?
I didn't think he crumbling by his own be singing that, but I suppose you're blue as well yourself, so...
Yeah. The team bonding thing was great. Like, there was the pizza, there was the movies, there was a few bits. Like, the team genuinely got on well with each other and really interacted well with each other on that social level, like...
They did, and as you said, it was a lot of games there, different backgrounds, there's all different shapes and sizes on there, but you could see even when the two Italians joined, like, they were willing to show off their skills to try to help their teammates along, and the lads were looking at them and wanted to be like them. They wanted to be able to flick the ball up and carry it behind their neck or do the Maradona turn and stuff like that. So, like, there's no, like, I suppose what's sort of like they were expressing themselves and everybody wanted to try that. So, like, try these things out in training, like the creative side of things. Gaelic and Ireland, the kids loved it.
That was probably the most coaching a lot of kids got, actually. The Italians were showing them how to do things.
Yeah.
So, but they're very good.
Yeah, like, and that was something that really stuck out to me, was that peer-to-peer coaching that the Italians were giving the other kids. Like, and even right at the end of the game, and Sam, Will Ferrell's son, was on the bench, right? And he obviously done the rollover that he'd seen and then scored a goal, and, like, everyone was amazed that this was after happening. But the thing he said that really stuck out was that every time you put me on the bench, I just practice more, you know? So there was that element of it. And there was also the element of, like, Will Ferrell, like Phil Weston, could not play. Like, anytime he went to actually demonstrate anything, he nearly dislocated himself. You know? So, like,
there's... Going at the start, when he was younger.
Yeah, like, it was just... It really gave, like, the film... And it's hard nearly to do it justice, because it does, as you said, Shane, have so much learning for that foundation course. Look, you've never been involved in Gaelic games before. This is what it's like, you know, and there's learning. Everyone can recognise a little bit of themselves in the different characters that are in the film, like
coffee addictions and the like. Yeah, and like I think that, like the peer-to-peer coaching, like if we think back, I'd imagine most of the skills we acquired ourselves as players in whatever sport was from peer-to-peer learning. Like it was from seeing somebody else doing it and trying to emulate them, as opposed to a coach actually teaching you how to jab lift a ball. Like I didn't learn to jab lift a ball from a coach. I learned to jab lift in the back garden. And I'd imagine most of us were sort of similar or out in the green. And it's really, really important that's there. But I suppose the other side of it with the Italians was them being a part of the team. I suppose there was positives and negatives. The positives, they were winning and the kids were enjoying a little bit better. They might have been as on the ball or getting as much game time, but there was winning. And that is important. So it's not to be all pushed aside. But the whole carry-on of the ball to the Italians, and that's something we do see with younger coaches a lot of the time, like, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And even saw the parents all got swept up in it, and that as well. And they were even reminding the kids, you know, pass it to the Italians and whatever else, their big Italian flag that the parents had in the match. But it does, it becomes, and I think it happens adults more than kids, where the adults start tasting the victories or whatever, and they get really swept up in it. Obviously, the kids maybe definitely they need it as well, and it is very important, but it's nearly more important to the adults, and they get really swept up in it as well. Like, and I think, I know now it's probably for the film and comedy and whatever, but the parents didn't really pull Phil up on when he went off the rails altogether, because they were still winning, you know. And I think that was almost as important to them, you know. And there's loads of times where they just shouting in, and I remember give it to the Italians and all this kind of stuff, like, you know.
You see it, you still see it a lot, and as you said, it does come from the sidelines. If their sons or daughters' teams are winning the match and just they're even losing the match, get the ball to such and such share, and it seems like they get a lot more satisfaction than the children are actually playing when they're winning.
But sure, and look, even look at the way the teams are lined out, like pretty much any juvenile game you go to, the best players in the pitch are going to be 6, 8, 9, and 11,
yeah,
possibly 14. But it's not going to be your 2 or your 4, or maybe one of the corner forwards is somewhat decent. But that's the way teams are set up, and like games are designed to try and win them, like, you know. So you don't set up in a manner where you're trying to lose the game. And it's just like look, it's a difficult one. We touched on already about that winning versus development side of things, and like it did get towards that development side of things later on, and it was the more peripheral fellas who won the game in the end. When, like, you see it, that fella who's a head taller than everyone at under 12, and everything goes through him at under 12, but the growth rate catches up on him by under 16, and he's no longer the main man. And if you haven't developed the other fellas alongside him or the other girls alongside her, then you're going to get caught at that stage, because everything that we'll say them physically strong players end up getting evened out a lot of the time, you know. So it's an interesting,
yeah, definitely, and they get passed out, like, and not just I've seen it. I play with lads now in senior team that can't give simple passes or can't see space because they played on weaker underage teams where they were encouraged just to carry the ball and other people out of the way and all that. And I don't know, I hope it doesn't happen as much, but definitely you don't have to go back too far to where it was. And it was happening probably as young as under 10, under 12, you know, give it to such and such, or such and such has it, you know, to get out of his way and give him room, you know. So it's very kind of true to life, that one, you know.
Like, you mightn't see it as much anymore. Well, you don't see it as much anymore, but how many people have you come across who've played, say, 3 years minor at county level or 2 years, and they never progress? They, like, by the time even they're playing their third year minor, I know it doesn't happen anymore, like, they're not the player they were 2 years ago. I don't know what it is. And then they don't go on to senior level at all, even with their clubs, some of them. So just have to be very wary, yeah, that just because they're big when they're younger, that we're not putting too much pressure on them. Sorry, when things do get tough, that they're willing to pack up then.
Yeah, like I think it is. And I think if every club, every person actually looked at their own club or county team and said, right, who was the best player on that under 16 team or that minor team? And of that age group, is he still the best player 5 or 10 years later? Like, I'd say it's very rare that it is. Like, I am just thinking back to minor teams that I would have had, I would have seen at club and county level, like, and there's nearly always somebody passed them out.
Yeah, and often you're sort of overlooked, maybe cornerback or fringe player of a average county minor team goes on to play 10 or 12 years senior as a you know, starter every day, like, you know, as well. So you kind of, as coaches, we have to be very mindful to nurture that the less glamorous, less headline player, I suppose, at underage as well, because potentially they could be the main guy for you long term, like, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I thought another thing that stood out to me, look, it's probably sort of stood out to me because I mentioned it in every course I do, was if you go into a bank or a shop, if you go into a coffee shop and there's two queues and there's one person in one queue and there's 10 in the other, which queue would you go into? And you'll always go into the queue with one, because who wants to be the 10th person in line, you know? And you could see it in the film when Phil, with his coffee addiction, was way back in the queue. And he was just getting agitated. But a lot of the time, coaches will go down to training and they'll build that queue into training where the kids have to wait 4, 5, or 6 deep for their turn to do something. And I just thought it was really funny, like, that it's something that we'd see so often, and we constantly try to get teams not to go into the drills where fellas are lined up 5 or 6 deep, because, Jesus, if you've got 20 of training and there's 4 fellas on a ball, you can surely do a lot better than that. Like, and I enjoyed that myself, because it's something I see a lot. But it is coaches, like, have to be more aware of utilizing their equipment and stuff to avoid that scenario.
Yeah, it was similar to that problem. One thing I noticed is his very first session where he was introducing himself to the players and getting to know them as well, which I thought was pretty good, and he footballs and passes about themselves, whatever. Then next thing he said, right, we wanted to do a few drills, and he started looking in his book and reading out word for word the drills and how many feet they take and which way to turn, and the next thing the kids were all gone running. And they said that's not a million miles off what would happen, you know, or what. I remember in my own club there was a guy, he'd only finished up playing senior, and he played senior for Wexford. He was a real good club player as well. And he's like many people, his young fellow was that age, under 7s or whatever. So he took over the team in his first session. He was there about 4 hours an hour early, and he had everything lined up, and he cones all over the place. This deadly session. I said, the lads ran in. I said, within seconds, every cone and everything that they had down was gone. It was gone. The frisbees thrown all over the place. And he had a moment of panic. He didn't know what he was going to do. And another guy, a cousin of mine, who around the same time, this was the year before that other guy had a team, but he took over the team, and he had 2 chaps playing, and on the way home from training, he asked the chaps, trying to get a bit of feedback, and he said, what was the best part of the session? And the young fella said, you know, kids, honestly, when you left us alone, the best part of the session, they were climbing up the nets and stuff. And he said he was absolutely flattened. He was never going to go back coaching again. So this was kind of reminded me of that a lot, you know.
It's true. Like, I used to do it all the time in schools. I'd leave a bag of footballs in the, just the balls in the bag, and I'd leave them there, and the lads would come out for the lads' school, and there'd be chaos. They'd just be running out, jumping on the balls, baiting the heads of each other, to be honest with you. And you're just hoping none of them get hurt, but it's a bit of crack. And then you do the same in the girls' schools, and the girls would just walk out, ball out at a time, pass to each other, next ball, just more say robotic, but they were more organized. They could start a lot quicker. Yeah. Or the lads just want to go messing and killing each other, and it's good crack. Lads, I'm going to throw out a question there now. So if you get your Will Ferrell down coaching a team at under 8s, because he's left there, how do we start as a club to educate that coach? Or if you are Will Ferrell, how would you go about trying to better yourself or improve yourself? Is there any way we can help right from the start?
One of the obvious things would probably be send them on a coaching course, but a guy like that probably wouldn't want to go or feel the need to. I was thinking of that too. Like, and I've often seen guys like that, and you might say to yourself, geez, if you videoed him now and showed him the way he's carrying on, would he see what it is? So maybe, you know, if you could video one of the sessions or even video him on the sideline of a match, probably more so, and show it to him, maybe that might be a good starting point anyway.
Yeah, there's a couple of tools there for coach observation, the ASUOI and then the CAIS observation tools. And it just get, if you've done it on Phil Weston or you've done it on your under-8 coach in the club, just to see the different actions they're carrying out. Are they doing enough praise? Is there too much scold? What sort of instructions are they giving? Just get a handle on the different type of things that they're doing in that training session. And like, if you can film it, as Shane said, and give it to them as feedback. So like, the ideal situation would be, Shane is a new under-8 mentor in the club. I'm a coach developer within the club. Okay. I possibly observe the session or film the session. Then I'd watch the video back, give a bit of feedback. And then Shane had watched the video with that bit of feedback. And he'd go, yeah, do you know, he probably has a valid point there. He goes, Jesus, I could have something written down. Shane was constantly giving out to the players during the session. He goes, no, I wasn't doing that at all. But then an observation of the video goes, Jesus, I actually was doing that. It's not something I was consciously aware of. And then that could lead to, that bit of reflective practice can lead to the behaviour change and Shane being aware of what he's doing rather than just doing it and not being aware and then being able to improve upon it.
I think it's very important that you don't just because you get a coach for the under-8s or under-10s that you just don't leave them there to fend for themselves. Like, I think as a club, you do need to keep an eye on them, make sure they're okay, provide a mentor for them, provide other coaches going down, give them a dig out at the start, show them the ropes, especially for a novice coach. So again, like, you don't just want to be like left there to, as I said, defend for yourself. You turn the coach off for life.
You know, just another thing there on the coach observation side of things as well, like, and coaches being consciously aware of what they're doing or what they're not doing. Like, would you say Phil Weston was aware that he ran 10 yards into the pitch and slapped the young fella in the back? Like, and then he starts, it was actually funny because the young fella's name was Apatow, like Judd Apatow, and I actually thought it was a son. But it wasn't. All the names in the back of the jerseys were named after, we'll say, the not the cast, but the, what's the background in a movie's name?
Producers.
Yeah, producers, all them boys. It was named after all them families. But like, he was abusing the young fellas. And he probably just ended up in a zone during the match that he wasn't aware that he was physically doing them things. And it'd be horrified if he looked back on it.
I'd say so. I've seen guys, maybe not that extreme, but definitely, you know, by the way they're carrying on, that they've just lost it, they're sort of red mist or whatever, they don't realize what they're doing. And I'd say that, you'd hope that was one of those moments.
It was funny.
Anything else in the movie? Like, I think there was about a 10-minute spill. Anything else from a coaching perspective?
Yeah, another thing that stuck out with me with Phil Weston is he wasn't his own person. He was constantly kind of magpieing about the place, looking for shiny new things that somebody else was doing. Like, there was the scene very early on in the film where he looked, their second or third match, and he looked over and this coach and player were doing this little kick on the shins or whatever. Immediately yeah. He tries to do it with Sam, like, and just kicks him straight in the shins, like, and like trying to copy off what other people are doing, and like that doesn't work. Like, and he constantly, like, at different stages you want to be Mike Dick, at different stages you want to be his dad. And it was only when he was himself, when they were being beaten 13-0 or in the final game, when he was himself, is when he was the most effective coach during the film. And I think it's something that, like, don't try to be something that you aren't, and like, don't be trying to
mimic others.
I think that definitely, it goes back to what you're saying earlier about the coaching the player thing. Like, he was probably more genuine. Again, the kids could probably see it, like, that if he was going around mimicking Dick and he was wearing the Bears jumper and he told him to go change or whatever, but they probably sensed he, when he was being genuine, or when he kind of knew what he was talking about. And again, I think that's true to life a lot of times too. The kids can sense if you're bluffing them to an extent, you know.
Like there's loads in it. Like I said, you could watch it again, and you could just watch it from his father's the way he coached. But we don't have time for that. But as I said, it's a very interesting film to watch for a lot of things. How not to do a lot of things, and how not to get too wrapped up. And I think Shane, was that you're saying there, you had it in foundation courses and stuff, showing clips of it. I think it's a fantastic, fantastic tool to use for people who are presenting courses, or for club officers who are showing new coaches things. Just watch the film.
Like even when you mentioned his dad there, and you say like there's actually, I suppose there's two, well there's three coaches in the film really, but like the dad is wasn't him or the man who, but like everything is a competition. Like even when the son was born and his uncle was born the same day, the uncle was a pound or an ounce heavier or whatever, and father was like, you know, that's a win or whatever result, like, you know. So there's the whole way through, it's a competition, and there's a kind of that whole element of he not been able to live up to his father's expectations and that whole relationship, which that's probably a whole another podcast or something. Definitely molded him into that, the probably where he went off the rails, kind of, you know, that was probably a lot of the reason for that happening, you know.
Yeah. Like I think there was about a 10-minute spell right in the middle of the film. It was very, very funny, like, and just a couple of lines there where if Vindicta came down, he was like, if you guys were the Bears, I'd fine you 10 grand each, you know? And he called another one, when the referee's wig fell off and Bing Bong picked it up, and he's like, look at me, I'm the ref, look at me, I'm the ref.
It was very funny.
He said, when the father was giving the speech inside in the old pub or restaurant, whatever, it was, he goes, what do you say? He's like, I love him like a son. The last one was it? Even little kids in Mexico drink coffee. Ditka and Robert Duvall, I thought they were brilliant characters in it, just overall. Yeah. Just really, yeah. I thought really good, funny characters.
We've all looked after summer camps and young teams, whatever it is. How many times have you seen a child put the football up their jumper pretending they're pregnant, like the little lad done in the movie? It happens all the time. Or even the fella picking up digging the hole, building sandcastles, eating the worm. It's like this, just all things that we've seen as coaches. And I thought it was a great scene. A couple of them, they were brilliant.
Right. What do we give Phil Weston out of 5 for kicking and screaming? Shane, as a guest, and you can give him the first score.
Yeah, I'm going to go straight down the middle. And, well, I'm going to be a little bit generous, and I'm going to give him a 3 out of 5 because he came full circle, and he started off with good intentions, and like I made a little list of things he did good there. So they started with good intentions, saying all the right things and all about fun and effort and all that. When he knew he wasn't going well, he recruited a bit of expertise, so that was Dick, so that was very good. He went and found new players, which was great, you know, as well. He kept all of his own players, now barely, but he did, which is, to me, measuring a season by success is, do you have all your players at the end of it? But now I'm going to contradict myself and say that he won the championship as well, which is a great thing. Like things like the team building, even he bought Finches for everyone, so he was trying to get in the good books of everyone or whatever, or do something nice, even though the parents didn't like that. And my list for negatives was slightly shorter, although I know maybe the thing about going out and flattening a player probably outweighs all of those good things, but we've kind of put it in context and say he didn't do a lot of coaching and he got caught up in it and kind of things like that. But as I say, he came full circle, so generous 3 out of 5 would be my rating on him.
Very good. Massey?
I'm going to give him 1.5.
Whoa!
you can't be going around hitting kids or goading them on the sideline or getting involved with the referee in the middle of the pitch. But it was good. But one other thing. So you give your ratings there first, as I'm back to something that sense. 1.5 for me.
Yeah, do you know what? I was going to give a little bit lower, But like Shane outlined a lot of things he done really well, and it was very much that full circle that he was. He learned on the job and improved as he goes along. I'm gonna give him a 2.5, and he's losing a half for the way he pronounced Pele as well. I don't know if it's an American thing or what it was, but it really frustrated me throughout it. It was meant to frustrate me or what the story was, but like, you do not pronounce it that way, end of story.
Pelly probably has his name trademarked or something in a certain way to say it. He's mad for money that has.
I'm going to give him a 3 as well, because look, as I said, I know there was massive flaws, but I think he started really well. He took on a very difficult job. He took on a really difficult job that nobody else wanted. And in fairness, for someone that had no skill set at the start or no experience, he made errors, but I think he learned from it and he was able to reflect and he was able to correct himself. So I'm going to give him a 3. So a nice solid, I think it averages out about 2.5 there for him. Close enough. So thanks. That's it. Thanks very much.
Just one thing I'm going to say there, Colin, lads. Have you ever had a team that have got so much out of winning one championship in the 1985 Chicago Bears? Like Dick pops up in a load of different films, a load of TV shows. Their players are the same. They're renowned. I know they won one Super Bowl in 1985 and was one of the best teams ever, but geez, they're everywhere. Dick arrives in a lot of films for what they achieved.
I'd say Wexford 96, Massey can challenge him.
I don't see any of the Wexford 96 players. But they ended up with a fantastic song that lived for generations, so they can have that.
No, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, I'm afraid, Massey. No. And anyone else? No. Shane, I know you did a few podcasts and stuff there. You're involved with thing. Do you want to give a plug there?
Yeah, I suppose, look, the Help Me Coach, is our kind of one now. We kind of took a break from it there last summer there between, there was everything. There was babies and building houses, and there was even funerals and things and everything, so we took a break. So, but we are going to bring it back, a bit like yourselves, for kind of the season 2 fairly soon. So I suppose anyone that's listening that's interested in kind of coaching, it's kind of, I suppose we're not talking about coaching through films, but we're talking about a lot of the same stuff that we spoke about here, and it's kind of the clues in the name. It's designed to kind of help coaches improve little bits and pick up little nuggets here and there, and it tries to be a bit of crack at the same time. So maybe keep the ears out for when it's back on.
Then you've Twitter and a website, and they can find you at helpmecoach.ie, is it?
That's the one, yeah, that's it.
I really enjoyed the film, to be honest. And it was nice to, like, a lot of the films, there's not too many focus on kids. And so I suppose for a large cohort of coaches, it's something that really is applicable to them. So thanks very much for your time. And thanks, Paul and Massey.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.
Really enjoyed it.
Thanks a million.
Thanks for joining us today. Please leave a review on your favorite platform. And if you enjoyed it, tell a friend. You may also want to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Roy Orbison Tattoo. And we appreciate any likes, retweets and comments and any suggestions for future viewings. Next week, we will be watching Peaceful Warrior, and we'll have the Irish goalkeeper David Ford on the show. The show will be available first thing Tuesday morning, as always. Thanks, everybody.